WPFW, Washington.
Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and June. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m., WPFW, 89.3 FM. Welcome. Again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Raucous Caucus.
Evening. Welcome to another edition of the Raucous Caucus. My name is Garland. I'm right here with Terry Kester. We have a special guest. Of course, you know, the fun drive is going on, and we're going to be talking to you about that. But we're going to be talking about Egypt tonight, and we have a very special guest, Mr. Tariq Nebet. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Thank you, guys.
Mr. Nebet, we're just going to call him Tariq from now on. But Tariq is a good friend.
We can call him Professor Nebet because he was
a
teacher.
Yeah, that's right.
But we'll call him Tariq.
God, yes. Give the man credit.
Here's what you might want to know. We're going to be talking about Egypt tonight. And Tariq is very familiar with the political scene and the social issues in Egypt. In fact, his grandfather was the Minister of Planning and Economics.
Yep, that's right.
And also served as the Deputy Prime Minister of Egypt under
Anwar Sadat.
Anwar Sadat.
Well, what years was that?
Late '70s.
Late '70s.
And what was his name?
Abdelrazak Abdelmegid.
Okay, excellent. So he's very familiar. We are right here at Ben's Chili Bowl,
1213 U Street.
Ben's next door.
If you're at Ben's Chili Bowl, come next door.
That's right.
To Ben's next door and join us up in the back. There's plenty of room available if you're listening to our voice.
Yep.
Come join us, and you can ask the questions of our esteemed guests.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. I'm sure you have some questions. You know for a fact you're not hearing reality on the mainstream media, but you're going to hear it on WPFW every time. So,
and we truly are here at Ben's. I want to point that out only because apparently some callers got some misinformation that we weren't going to be here tonight.
I'm sorry about that.
And so we apologize for that, but we are really here at Ben's, and you can be here with us.
So, Terry, I understand that we have some wonderful gifts for those.
Yeah, we got to mention that right away.
It is a pledge drive.
Yeah, it's a pledge drive.
It is a pledge drive. We have to mention that. We're honored to mention that.
We need your help, frankly.
Because WPFW is just headed in a new world of coming. I mean, that's the theme of the pledge drive, the new world of coming. And WPFW is going through all kinds of fantastic changes. It really, truly is.
Yep.
Garland and I had a great meeting today with John Hughes, the new general manager. And you're going to see changes in growth in WPFW that are really going to please you. But we can't do any of it unless you pledge. So it's that simple. 202-588-9739. And we're offering, as usual, the greatest gifts, you know, for your pledge that you could possibly imagine.
Gifts that, not to put down the other show, but I don't know any other show offers the gifts that we offer.
No, they can't.
They're not the Raucous Caucus.
They're not the Raucous Caucus.
We actually allow you to join the Raucous Caucus.
Yes, we have more courage or more insanity or both. You know, and for, we've got, you know, for a mere $50 pledge.
$50.
You get to pick the topic that Garland, Mark, and I have to deal with.
That's raucous over.
Yeah, that we have to raucous over and think about and research about and present facts, truth, and a little bit of entertainment as well. And even better than that, for $100, you get to come here as a co-host.
Whoa.
You are as raucous as the caucus.
You can rock-eye. There's no question about it. You could rock us with us.
Yes,
right. And for $150, you get to pick the topic and be a co-host, and we have to keep up with you.
And just think about this. A 50,000-watt FM station in Washington, D.C., in the nation's capital.
Covering everywhere from the North Carolina border to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, west to West Virginia.
To Acapulco,
Maryland,
to Paris, to Cairo,
Delaware,
probably.
There we go. Yeah, so this is a great opportunity for you if you really want to be part of the conversation in America and part of the conversation in the world. For a mere $150, you can be a big part of the conversation here on the Raucous Caucus.
And listen, if you want to pledge that but you don't want to appear on air, you don't have to. We have many listeners that like to certainly listen to us.
Yeah,
and for a mere $35, you can become a member of WPFW, a voting membership. And so really any pledge of any level, we are certainly grateful for. WPFW needs your support.
And WPFW has a new program which fits right into what Mark was saying there, and that's the WPFW Bill of the Month Club. You can call in and make a pledge for a year and, you know, pledge just
$3 a month.
A monthly amount. Like I know many foundations and charities do, and WPFW is offering this as well. For $10 a month, you can just simply pledge $120, $10 a month. Or, you know, $1 a day, you know, pledge $365. It's $1 a day.
We'll give you two topics of your choice.
Yeah, right.
So you just think about it. Yeah. Oh, you don't really have to do anything. You just this automatically comes out of your account. You just make a pledge every month. You're helping WPFW move in the right direction.
And we need that kind of consistency and support so we can make all the wonderful changes, technological changes, personnel changes, advertising changes, all kinds of changes.
Why don't we give out the phone number so they can call
That's
in?
That's a good idea.
What a great idea. I'm glad
this
you're
here, Mark.
I'll tell you, boy. 202-588-9739 or 1-800-202-9739.
I think it's 222-9739.
222.
Right. 222. I can't read my own writing.
1-800-222-9739 or 202-588-9739. If you forget the 9739, that's just WPFW.
Yeah.
So 1-800-222-WPFW. Even Terry can't forget that number.
I'm so excited to be here with you guys. I just, you know, I
so,
just can't
let's
forget.
Move on to Egypt,
yes,
though.
Yes, and don't forget, we are right here at Ben's Next Door, right next to Ben's Jelly Bowl. What's 1213 U Street, Northwest? Come on down. There's plenty of time. We have plenty of time in the show. Be a part of the show. Ask some questions. So, good evening. How are you doing tonight, Terry?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Good to have you.
So, I understand you actually lived in Egypt for several years, from 2002 to 2006. Let me ask you this. When you were in Egypt, could you see anything brewing? Because this wasn't long ago. Could you see any unrest? Could you see anything coming?
Well, look, I'll tell you a little bit about my experience back then, 2002 to 2006. People are struggling. Even back then, people were struggling. The talk of politics is done, you know, in the cafes, behind closed doors. Yes, they have a large press syndicate. They've got a lot of newspapers. A lot gets written every day in the newspapers about what's going on in Egypt. Of course, there's a lot of control coming from the top. So, back then, no, I wouldn't say that there was a lot of there wasn't anything brewing back then. And, you know, with major political movements and major calls for change, a lot of it has to do with timing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Egyptian crisis, the Egyptian uprising, whatever you want to call it, certainly, having come after the Tunisian uprising earlier this year, I think those individuals who have been waiting for the right moment to jump on something that was going to help bolster whatever it is they've been thinking about, they found that earlier this year, after Tunisia, this was the right time. So back then, things were calm. Tourism was good. Students are going to school. People are going to work every day. On the other hand, though, you still have a large number of people who are unemployed. So Egypt is not a country without its own problems, domestic problems, and there are some big ones.
It seems to me, though, that this is basically a long-time grievance that Tunisia was perhaps the spark that lit up the gasoline, but the gasoline had been there for a very long time. Egypt's had three rulers in the last 60 years, since 1952, Nasser for 20-odd years, Sadat for about 10, and now Mubarak for the last 30.
Right.
Do you think, and of course you know Egyptian history well, do you think that the people's view towards their government has changed from the time your grandfather was Deputy Prime Minister at Sadat, the time of Nasser, to Mubarak today? Or has there always been this kind of resentment?
I think the resentment has been underlying for quite some time now. And one of the problems, as you know, someone who was born and raised here, but my family is Egyptian from Egypt, and I still have family that live there today. And one of the major discrepancies is the lack of education. And the system of education there is not perfect, neither it is here, but what is being taught, the way children are taught in schools in Egypt is far behind, you know, our system here.
Mm-hmm. Has that changed over the last 60 years? It's always
no, unfortunately, it hasn't. And, you know, with the amount of aid that the America gives to Egypt, 90% of it going towards military and security purposes and interests, what has suffered big time is the educational system. The opportunities that could have been created for people to go to work has not happened. And just people aren't being educated the way you and I would be educated here. The critical thinking skills are not taught. It's all rote memorization.
Wait a minute. Critical thinking taught here in the United States. I'm trying
he
to
said taught, not used.
Oh, okay.
There's
okay.
a big
I
difference.
Make, it's taught. Sure that
you don't British. Worry, we're not attacking you
well,
yet, Terry.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. It's the 14th day, I guess, of the uprising at this point, or yeah, the
2 weeks.
The protest. 14th day. And I'm struck by one thing particularly, Tariq, that you might be able to help us with. This, it seems that Mubarak is really trying to divide whatever is left of the movement at this point, and that it almost feels like the movement is beginning to peter out, and this bit, this clever bit of 15% raise for public sector employees, you know, seems like such an obvious ploy to diffuse this whole thing. Is this movement in danger of just sort of fading away? I know that the crowds are fewer, that there are fewer people
and
in the
army's
square.
In the square
it's,
now.
It's possible. No, it's totally possible. I mean, with any movement to maintain the power of that is going to take something from the people. It's going to take resources. It's going to take willpower. Mubarak, in making small concessions, that's his way of trying to, as you say, divide and conquer, to take away the gust of wind that have the people have been riding since the Tunisian uprising earlier in January, I should say. We're in February now. So yes, there is the possibility of this movement dissipating. What's it going to take for them to maintain their presence in the streets? What's it going to take for them to maintain the power that they feel that they have in moving forward? It's a very good question. It's going to take some leadership. I don't think anybody has presented themselves as a leader or a team of leaders who are willing to step up and take control on behalf of the people who are out in the streets. And that's one of the
now,
things that I
there was
a
group see. That met recently with the Egyptian government, but they don't represent the streets.
Well, I wouldn't say that they wouldn't represent the streets. I don't know that they have organized themselves in such a way that the people on the street have granted them full authority to be negotiating and discussing on their behalf.
Well, you know, something interesting, it may seem insignificant, but I think it's important, and that was a few minutes ago what we call it, because we said, you know, uprising or what, because an uprising tends to have the sound of being very temporary, of movement sounds long-term. You know what I mean? I mean, it may be
I call it a revolution.
Yeah,
but
a revolution is, you know, is a powerful word and tends to have a kind of militaristic connotation, kind of
an overthrowing, angry.
So, and this, yeah. and these people, what I find interesting here, and Egypt is a very well educated. It is one of the most educated countries in the Middle East.
Oh, sure.
What I find interesting here is that there is now from the protesters, there really is little violence. You know, there's not a lot of them. Now, of course, Mubarak seemed to have shipped some thugs in, but it seems to be not a very violent.
They can't win by violence. I mean, they got the military and the police against them. The only way they could win would be through nonviolent.
Well,
still,
what is your concept? Almost 300 people have been killed.
Yeah.
Right.
What is your concept?
Right, but not from their violent acts.
From your perspective, what is your concept? What is this thing that we're trying to determine what we'll call?
This is uprising. I wouldn't go so far as to call it a revolution.
Not yet. It could become, but it's not there yet.
Well, with the way the army has been trying to stay neutral, quote unquote. Okay, mm-hmm. They're trying not to take sides. Their side is peace and security, right? Their side is no violence. And they're walking a very fine line. Anti-government protesters, quote unquote. Again, what they really are doing is standing up for themselves as individuals and as a collective. And Garland and I were talking a little bit about this earlier. What does it mean to be a society rooted in individualism versus one rooted in collectivism? And we can get into that a little bit later. But they're standing up for what they feel they deserve in terms of human rights and freedoms and equality and independence. And B, they're standing up for a change that they've wanted for a very long time.
What do they want? I know they want Mubarak to go, but Mubarak has said, I'm leaving in September. Okay, they want him to go now. I get that. Would they be happy with the new vice president, Omar Suleiman?
No.
Do they want more than that? What specifically
Well,
Omar
Suleiman has been a longtime ally of Mubarak.
Sure.
So is the perception of him
is the same.
As someone who is going to be willing to put the people's needs ahead of his own or ahead of anything else? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Omar Suleiman is a guy who knows how to deal in politics. He's very well accepted here in America, for example. He deals a lot with the American political system. So from the American standpoint and our foreign policy, they like him.
Is he Mubarak too?
No.
He's not. He wouldn't be as brutal. I mean,
To be honest, I mean, he's been in charge of the intelligence community.
Sure.
Oh,
so,
good.
That's pretty brutal.
Great. Hello, Putin. How you doing?
But here's something that's important, and that is, it's not what he is, because in reality, you never really know what he would be with VB if he was in power. Right now, what's important is, what determines everything is, what is the perception by the Egyptian people of what he would be, because that determines how they would...
Sort of depends on what happens in the next 6 months. A couple of scenarios can play out. One, Mubarak can stay in power with Omar Suleiman as his vice president until elections in either June or September. If Mubarak, before elections happen, then steps down, then I believe, according to the Constitution, the vice president would take over transitional authority until elections are held again, okay? So even if Mubarak were to step down today, tomorrow, Omar Suleiman would only be in power for a very short period of time before elections have to get called.
And of course, for the last 30 years, there was no vice president. So
exactly. This is
the Constitution. There was no one for 30 years.
Yeah. Let me throw in the big question, which is a little bit more on a personal level as well. I have a sister-in-law who is Egyptian, and she's Coptic, Christian, mm-hmm. Coptic. And she's obviously very concerned about the persecution of the Christians and the rise of a Muslim movement of the
Muslim Brotherhood,
which I understand represents about 30% of the protesters, something like that. It's probably the only group, even though they've been disempowered, that is relatively organized. And her comment to me, which was rather scary, my sister-in-law's comment, she's gone back to Egypt almost on a yearly basis to see mm-hmm. family and friends there. And she still has relatives there, primarily in Alexandria. And she said every time she goes back, it's more of a culture shock each time.
In which direction, Terry? What do you mean?
Towards extremist Islam. More and more women dressed, you know, in Muslim garb, more and more veils and burqas, et cetera.
Is there more persecution against the cops?
Well, there's been bombings of Coptic churches and everything else. And she actually made the comment, which really kind of scared the heck out of me. She sees it almost becoming another Saudi Arabia.
Okay, let's do this. We'll stop for a second. We're going to touch on the Muslim Brotherhood in a moment. Like, we're going to get back and talk about WPFW. First of all,
the greatest station in the country.
That's right. First of all, you're listening to the Raucous Caucus. My name is Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D. Kester,
and we have Tariq Nabed, our special guest. Tariq is of Egyptian descent. He lived in Egypt for several years, and in fact, his grandfather served as the Minister of Planning and Economics in Egypt and as the Deputy Prime Minister under Anwar Sadat. As you know, when you listen to WPFW, you're going to get really good stuff. You're going to get interesting stuff. And since we don't take any money from corporations, we don't owe anything to anyone, so we can say whatever we need to say. You'll hear people on here that you're not going to hear other places in your
world. To the streets, yes. Americans. To the streets.
That's right.
Which Terry says practically every show.
Yeah, that's right.
But he couldn't say that on corporate-sponsored radio.
Probably not.
That's right, Terry. The Egyptians got it right.
Yeah,
to the streets.
Come on, guys.
Yeah,
wake up.
Them. So, Terry, I understand we have some wonderful things. Let's go to Terry.
Hey, the gifts that we offer, and no other show that we know of in America is offering what the Raucous Caucus is offering. One, because we respect you and respect the contributions you have made to the show as well. For $50, you get to pick the topic that Garland, Mark, and I have to wrestle with and discuss and stick to and define and explore and also involve you with. Or for $100, you can come here and be a co-host. You can take Garland's chair. As a matter of fact, Garland will have
Garland's
chair.
I don't know.
Okay,
we'll take your chair.
Maybe my chair. Who knows? But all three of us will participate with you in discussing the topic that we choose. Or, for $150, you get to pick the topic and be a co-host and get in the middle of the Raucous Caucus.
Ooh.
Now, you don't know of any other show that's offering this. And
right.
I mean, in front of a live audience.
Right here
in America.
Biz next door. Right,
right down here on U Street and Ben's next door. You can be part of the whole celebration.
Bring your family and friends and watch them do your radio debut.
Yeah, right. You know, and even if we don't like the topic, you know, okay, well.
Take your tape to Mr. DeMille. He'll make you a star.
Right.
Now, you're not going to get many offers like this, and that's for a pledge of $150, topic and host, $100, co-host, topic for just $50. The point is, support WPFW, support the provocative show that we try to bring you, as well as the entertaining show. And all you got to do that is call 202-588-9739.
Believe it or not, from the last fund drive, we were able to pay amongst many things, we were able to pay a couple months' rent, which is very, very expensive.
Keep the signal up.
Yeah, keep the signal. It's nice to, actually be able to go into the studio and,
listen, no one gives you what WPFW, maybe other Pacifica stations in other areas of the country do.
Right. But
no one in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area gives you what WPFW does. Non-sponsored, non-commercial radio where the American people can come and talk about the things we talk about. We can diss corporations, and we do often on this show, because they don't pay our wages. That's very rare in America.
It truly is. And I want to point out, too, WPFW is investing not just in keeping the station going, but in making incredible progress technologically and everything else. I mean, we are getting to the point where we're going to be part of every technological means of broadcasting this show that is capable today technologically.
But we simply can't stay on the air without your support.
No, we simply can't. And we need you to call in right away at 202-588-9739.
WPFW.
202-588-9739. Call in now. Yep. Make your pledge. And to point out the fact, we're offering topic, host, or host and topic. This is not an empty offer. At the end of this month, the last Tuesday of this month,
you're right,
our show will be co-hosted by a contributor from last pledge drive that is finally, he's picked his topics and he's going to jump in and he's going to be co-hosting and selecting the topic with us at the end of the
month. So you will hear how it works and you can join in.
It's going to be a great show. And Mark, for just a meager, measly $35.
Well, then you're a member of WPFW. You're a voting
member.
You get a right to decide what programs are gracing your airwaves.
No, let's face it, if you're in Washington, D.C., your vote doesn't count for much in the first place.
No, you don't get a vote in Congress.
But you can make it count here.
Exactly right.
You have more rights than you do.
You have more rights here on WPFW than you have granted to you by the Constitution.
That's right. Give some money to your congressman, and then Bank of America will give them $1 million on top of yours, and they will control what the congressman does. Give a dollar to WPFW on a daily basis. You control, and we respond to the issues you need to hear about in ways that you're not going to hear anywhere else in the radio.
And you can be a part of it. Okay, let's back. Tark, we were talking about the Muslim Brotherhood, and Terry had mentioned that he has a relative.
Sister-in-law.
Yeah, 10% of Egypt, I believe, is Christian.
Let's talk about the Muslim Brotherhood. What do you know about the Muslim Brotherhood? Who are they, and what kind of influence do they have in the society from your perspective?
Well, first and foremost, I think you got to acknowledge the fact that they technically are an outlawed political party.
Right.
You know, ever since Mubarak came to rule.
Actually, earlier, I believe.
Earlier. No, they've been
under Nasser, even.
He's maintained that under his rule. And that doesn't mean to say they don't have influence. You know, they're very well organized. They have charities. They're out there doing work for the people in Egypt. But, of course, they're being stifled politically. Because their agenda is an Islamic agenda.
It's a theocratic state. They're not just Muslims that believe in charity and all, like Muslim organizations in the United States that go and help people. They want political power, right?
Yes, they want political power.
They want Islamic law to run Egypt.
Exactly.
Okay. Here's what's interesting. Did you have more?
Well, I just wanted to make a point, which is sort of interesting, because in the constitution of Egypt, it says that the law is going to be based in Sharia law.
It does say that in the
constitution. It does say that in the constitution.
It says that in most Arab countries, I believe, but it's often followed more in the breach than in the actuality.
Right. So here you have, if laws that are going to be made in Egypt are going to be based on Islamic law, based on Sharia law, obviously it's going to be subject to interpretation and subject to what the People's Assembly determine is going to be beneficial for their
country. You can have a liberal interpretation of Sharia law or
exactly.
a strict interpretation.
And here
the
Muslim Brotherhood, who's actually falling in line with that, except they have a more conservative, a more strict interpretation of what it means and how it's going to be applied to the people in everyday life.
Is that are they a threat to the movement?
To which movement? The uprising?
Are they a threat in the sense that they being more organized
they might co-opt
it? Yeah.
I don't think so, because they don't have the numbers. In terms of a numbers game, they are less populous than the majority secular constituency
is that
of the country.
In Cairo, or is that true nationwide? Because usually the cities are more liberal than the countryside for any
That's a good place. Question, and I really don't know.
So in Cairo, they're the minority, Cairo, to be sure.
Look, Cairo major is the biggest city. It's got a population of 18 million out of a population of 80 million, right?
Wow. Wow.
So what happens in Cairo pretty much decides?
A quarter of the population.
Cairo's going to set the tone.
Okay. Right.
Exactly. But that doesn't mean in some of the smaller cities outside of Cairo, to the north, to the south, mm-hmm. along the Nile, that the Muslim Brotherhood might not have more control or more influence than non-Islamic, non-Islamist and secular
What about Coptic
rulers.
Christians? Are they? Do you fear persecution? Do you think it's increased
they do.
Over time?
I can tell you that.
Is it worse than it used to be?
Look, I think it has been a little bit worse recently, which is unfortunate because prior to sort of the Islamic movement really carrying through, Christians and Muslims got along in Egypt. Mm-hmm. They are, you know, they used to be at about 20% of the population. Now they might be a little bit less. I don't know numbers off the top of my head.
I saw 10% was 10%. The Coptic Christian.
So it might have dwindled now down to 10%. There was a great picture, though, the other day that was circling around the internet of Coptic Christians standing arm in arm while the Muslims were praying in the middle of the protest. So they
That's
were protecting.
Terrific.
Their brethren, their fellow sure. Egyptians, while they were praying, they were linked arm in arm with their Muslim brethren in front of the Egyptian Museum, because that, you know, is a major symbol of national pride. So there is national unity, and they do, you know, I'd like to say that they do respect one another, but of course, tolerance is one of those issues that comes and goes.
Well, we'll take a break in a few minutes, but something that's important for us to talk about after the break, and that is the army. Because here we hear the term the army in America, and we think of something totally different than what the army is. The army is kind of like a separate branch of government, basically. They, as I understand,
and
actually
course, all their
run
leaders.
Businesses and things of
sure.
that nature.
And owned property.
So we need to talk about that. We're going to take a break in a second. But before we go,
2 minutes.
Before we go,
yes.
let's not forget that we need you to support WPFW. We've got a fund drive. And what is it, Terry? There's
a new. I don't know. I got to turn the page here.
A new what, Terry?
A new world coming.
I knew there was something
from
new.
From old world to the new world
yeah,
coming.
It beats the heck out of win the future, frankly.
Yeah, right. There you go.
It's kind of the same thing, I think. But
right.
Yeah,
so,
but I mean, we really are making changes in WPFW. Growth. I mean, it's really what it comes down to. And we've got some excellent leaders now that are working with WPFW, including, and don't forget, WPFW has a board of directors that is elected by members.
Like you.
If you pledge $35.
Yeah. You know, or you can vote on that membership to be, or you can actually be a candidate to be a member of that board and help WPFW in its growth.
And the phone numbers are
202-588-9739. Hey, we're all learning.
1-800-222-9739. Please pledge.
Group.
You know, it's just many of you, we see you all the time at Ben's Next Door. We're always glad to see you. Many of you come and go and come sometimes. But just knowing that you like our show is not necessarily enough. We need to know that you support the show as well. Because, let's face it, that's how WPFW...
Okay, you're listening to the Raucous Caucus here on WPFW, 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C. We'll be right back.
No one remember who my first job. No one remember who my first job is.
WPFW recognizes this day in Black history. Today, February 8th. In 1925, Pan-Africanist Marcus Garvey enters federal prison in Atlanta for a charge of alleged mail fraud. He would be deported back to Jamaica later that year. Also, the Temptations released their first charting single, The Way You Do the Things You Do on Motown. The song was written by Smokey Robinson and Bobby Rogers.
You got a smile so bright.
WPFW honors these African-American pioneers and all people who continue the struggle for freedom and justice. Today, February 8th, WPFW celebrates Black History Month. WPFW, serving the collective need and imagination of the community.
Oh,
Greetings, WPFW listeners. WPFW's local station board invites you to the LSB's regularly scheduled meeting on the second Wednesday of the month, February 9, from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. This month, the meeting will be held at AFSCME District Council 20 headquarters at 1724 Calorama Road, Northwest, Suite 200, just down the street and around the corner from WPFW. The LSB will be focusing on electing chairs of LSB committees. The public is invited to participate during the community comment portion of the meeting. Remember, it's the LSB meeting, Wednesday, February 9th at 6:30 p.m. at 1724 Calorama Road, Northwest, Suite 200. Hope to see you there. For more information, please call 202-588-0999, extension 0. Thank you.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening and welcome back to the Raucous Caucus here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington. My name's Garland Nixon. Every Tuesday night you can hear the Raucous Caucus with me and
Mark Levine
and
Pedro Mubarak.
Pedro? What do you mean? Terry D. doesn't want to say his name, Kester.
Thank you.
Because
thank
the authorities
you.
Are out to get
and
him.
And tonight,
that's why.
The D is for the Doctor of Diplomacy.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
tonight,
yes.
He's the Doctor of Diplomacy.
That was a mistake. I apologize
that's
for
right.
that. You know.
Okay. And tonight, we have a special guest. We have Mr. Tariq Nabet. Tariq is our – he is our resident Egyptian
scholar.
Expert. Yeah, Egyptian scholar, and he is, in fact, a scholar. Tariq lived in Egypt. He's his family's from Egypt. And, in fact, his grandfather served – as the Deputy Prime Minister of Egypt under Anwar Sadat. How cool is that? That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you're through asking about the military. I want to know, like, what it's like to be the grandson of somebody
let's
important
give out
in Egyptian
the phone numbers.
Government.
Let's give out the phone numbers here.
202-588-9739. Now, we're down at Ben's, so we're not hearing those phones ringing. We know if enough phones were ringing, we'd hear it down
That's right.
here at Ben's.
That's right.
So get in there and start calling. Our goal, by the way, is $500. That's not much. That means only five of you have to pledge to be a co-host on this show with us, and we've got our goal met.
Or 10 of you can pledge $50 and choose our topics for the next 10 weeks. We won't get a single topic. It'll all be yours.
Yeah. Here's the bottom line. Call up and pledge. Okay. Before we left, we were talking about the –
we were talking
army.
About
the army.
The army. We were going to the army. You know, the ages, you know, as you get old, the memory fades, and the first thing that goes is your memory, and the second, I can't remember. Okay. So where were we? The army, what we were talking about is this. Most people in America, when they think of the army, unfortunately, when Americans look at the Middle East, the first thing we see is America. That's why we never understand the Middle East. But the army is totally different, a completely different concept. Can you talk us about what the army is in the Egyptian society?
Well, it's a well-respected institution, first and foremost. You know, based on based on history, they're there as the army is here to protect the country from foreign invaders. Okay, of course, it's well known that Egypt had gone to war with Israel a number of times in the past, the Arab-Israeli wars. But since signing of the peace treaty in 1978, the Camp David Accords, the army really hasn't been tested or challenged. There hasn't been an external threat, okay, to the actual homeland of Egypt. Okay. Nevertheless, much has been spent on keeping the army up to date with the latest technology.
And American money, about
$1.2 billion
we give.
With American money.
Now, is there universal draft, or, I mean, how is the army staffed?
Conscription is mandatory.
It is mandatory,
unless you are the sole son of a parent, okay?
So it is a citizen army.
Yes, absolutely.
More so than ours.
More so than ours.
Pay attention.
Right. So again, well respected, but of course, and mandatory service term. I'm not sure.
Will the military respect the people of the uprising? So far, I saw a fascinating. I don't remember where I saw it. CNN, I think. I don't remember, but I saw people who actually they had their heads, three heads, underneath tank treads. There was a tank in the and they were clearly willing to die to have the tank crush their heads if they move their tanks.
And in fact, I saw where there were people, there was like an armored personnel carrier or something. There were a bunch of the protesters sitting on an armored personnel carrier, and they were talking to the military.
They were kind of like leaning up there chatting.
They
wrote anti-Mubarak slogans in spray paint on one of the tanks.
I didn't, Mark, see the image that you were talking about, but I did see something very similar to Garland, what you talked about, where people were on the tanks early on in the protests. The tanks were carrying protesters around, and they were cheering together, you know? So it was almost as if...
So can the people trust the military to not quell this uprising?
It's going to be a fine line for the military to walk, because they haven't declared one way or another. Like we were talking earlier, they're walking the line of keeping the peace, keeping the violence at bay, making sure that... people are not fighting one another. Civil war doesn't break out between, say, the Muslim Brotherhood or the sort of the more conservative Islamic constituents.
Or the pro-Mubarak people that came out and start beating a lot of protesters.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that impressed me so much. I mean, obviously, at least at this point, the army in Egypt is restraining itself with admirability. And the thing that impressed me in the very beginning was when the tanks went through and literally put out a smoke screen separating the pro-Mubarak people from the anti-Mubarak people. So that people could literally get away, so the conflict and when it was starting to get a little violent, they actually dissipated the violence.
They actually did what they're really supposed to do.
I'll tell you something. It was reported
to maintain peace.
Well, what they were supposed to do, I mean, that's really the job of the national police. But
they used tear gas and then ran away when the people fought back.
Okay, so the national police certainly have not received nearly as much funding and support as the national army has. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the big jokes in Egypt is you see police officers standing on the street with a gun, but there are no bullets. Like, there are just no bullets in the guns of the police officers. So, you know, real power, does the national police have real power to maintain the peace? No, unfortunately not.
Right.
Therefore, the army has sort of been called in as a backup to the national police, almost like a National Guard type role.
The Washington Post reported that the army had taken over all of the entryways to the main square.
Tahrir Square.
Tahrir Square. I want to pronounce it right. And they actually put barbed wire on some of those places. But they were allowing people in and out, but for one hour, they stopped food from going into the main square, and the people actually staged a sit-in saying, let us have the food, let us have the food. They sat right in front of the army, and 1 hour later, they lifted that prohibition of food. So there's a lot – it's not clear what's
going
on. Again,
they're taking orders from the chief of the army who is not a minister, for example.
Is he taking orders from Mubarak?
Well, he may be taking orders from Mubarak. He may be taking orders from the Minister of Interior, the Minister of Defense. But because the cabinet just got reshuffled and Mubarak had dismissed the cabinet, there was a small period of time in which the chief of the army, the head of the army, really either was taking orders from Mubarak himself or was on his own to make a decision on how the army, on what the behavior of the army should be.
Constitutionally, I mean, what is the position of the army? I mean, is there a commander-in-chief? Is there a civilian head?
Mubarak's the commander in chief.
Right,
is he truly
the commander in chief?
So he supposedly could say army attack, and the army is supposed to attack.
He could. I don't think he would.
Do you think there'll be a coup from within the military? That's how Nasser took power.
Analysts earlier prior to the uprising, basically at the end of last year, people were talking about what is the scenario? How is the scenario going to play out with the parliamentary elections that happened last fall? Presidential elections scheduled for later this year. Big articles in The Economist and The Post and The New York Times, even a lot of the think tanks here were publishing pieces on what is going to be the fate of Mubarak, what is going to be the fate of the Mubarak regime, will the army play a role in the transition and what's going to happen. It's still up in the air because ultimately it is, it's going to be the people as they are speaking up now to decide what's going to happen.
I want to ask you a completely unfair, impossible question that I guarantee you none of us in the Raucous Caucus can answer, but you're our expert. Right. All right, I'm putting you on the line. Tariq, make a prediction. Where's it going to go? It's the toughest question. No one can answer it. I'm putting you on the spot.
I hope that the leadership of the opposition can organize themselves in such a way to lead constructive negotiations. Mubarak has been he's entrenched in his power. you know, I would love to see him go out with some dignity. Mm-hmm. And I think he could go out with great dignity if he were to say, you know what, the people have spoken. Mm-hmm. This country is for the people, by the people. That's what the original revolution was for back in 1952. So he could really put the power into the people's hand and leave with dignity and not be afraid to ever come back to his own country.
Right, right.
And he could do that. And now that he's appointed the vice president, he's reshuffled his cabinet. A lot of people were afraid of a power vacuum, that if he were to step down prior to having...
He is 82 years old, after
all. He's 82. His health is still questionable. People don't know exactly how healthy he is. So it was really up in the air as to whether he would have been fit and able to run for re-election in September anyways.
But there's a part of the equation we're leaving out, and I want to ask you to throw this into your hypothetical solution to all of this, is that's the United States. Now, obviously, with $1.5 billion or whatever, billions of dollars, it's going to Egypt on a regular basis.
Not going to Egypt.
Going to Mubarak.
Not going to Mubarak.
Going to the army.
Let me just make a statement.
American contractors.
It never leaves the United States. The United States takes, like we do with so many other people, we take $1.5 billion.
Yes.
We go to U.S. Defense
arms
contractors. Yeah. We buy U.S. arms.
Yeah.
We send the arms over, and we say we gave them money.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
we, you know, out of that, you know, there may be a small percentage. But overwhelmingly, oftentimes when we say we're providing foreign aid to countries, we are simply transferring money out of the hands of our government into the hands of defense contractors, and then we send things over that many times the country
don't
want.
Where's Dwight Eisenhower when you need
him? And say that. If we were providing them.
But the question is that I'm asking, and you're exactly right, and thanks for that clarification, but the Army is obviously dependent upon, tied to United States. The military is dependent upon and tied to the United States. Mubarak has been tied to and dependent upon the United States. Now, United States officially, you know, is walking a gentle line. Ex officially or under the tables, I'm sure there's a lot more going on than that. What is, in your opinion, United States control, power, influence, role in this possible mess?
Great question. And just before the show started earlier, I was listening to the news, and they were commentating on, you know, how is Obama handling the situation, given the ties that we've had with Egypt for the last 30 years, given the amount of money that we, quote-unquote, give to them or not give to them. The role that Egypt has played as a strategic ally for the United States in the region, the importance of the Suez Canal for everybody in the world, not just for Egypt or America, but for everybody in the world. So, you know, with regards to U.S. foreign policy, they want to make sure that their interests are not threatened or damaged. In terms of then, as you move down the layers, what is the United States to do? It's a complicated situation. We have influence, certainly, because, you know, we could potentially threaten to take away the funding and the assistance
that we give to them. Already been threatened, by the way.
And, you know, Mubarak might not like that because for them, the military is a symbol of strength, a symbol of pride. And so that would be something that would literally hit home into Egyptian society. At the same time, more has been spent on the military than necessary, given the regional context. There's no external threats to Egypt, per se. Again, Obama's walking a fine line because they don't want to lose Egypt as a strategic ally. At the same time, they want democracy. They want transition. They want more freedom.
They meaning we?
We, yes, the United States government. Okay. I mean, that's part of our foreign policy is to promote democracy.
But if we really said, if we've said, you know, undercover or whatever, if we said, Mubarak, go away, that's it.
We've kind of said that.
What would happen?
I mean, Hillary Clinton seems to be
on the news today. They haven't explicitly said Mubarak needs to
step
down.
The transition needs to begin.
The transition
needs to
begin. So that leaves it vague. That leaves it open for, you know, interpretation. Is that the United States saying he needs to step
down? Should we say that?
No, I'm not asking that.
I want to know.
Under the table, they're not saying nice diplomatic words.
Oh, well, you know that behind closed doors, they're saying Mubarak, get out of there.
It'll be. Should stay tuned, guys. It'll be on WikiLeaks in a month.
Should they say publicly, Mubarak, it's time to go? What do you think?
At this point, I think it would be irresponsible.
It would be irresponsible.
Just say that publicly.
I agree.
Okay. Because it would be a drastic change in U.S. policy, and I don't think the Obama administration has even sufficiently prepared the United States for such a drastic statement to be
made.
Well,
let me ask you this.
Sarah Palin said we should.
We have now supported Egypt for 30-odd years, 35 years perhaps. Do the Egyptian people, are they mad at us? Are they mad at the United States and the Americans for supporting Mubarak?
Mark, that's something I want to touch on. We're going to talk about WPFW for again.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'll come back to
that
question.
That's something I do want to talk about, the view, how the Egyptian people see us.
Right.
Based on, in the past, we said we want democracy, but all we really wanted was stability, whether it was democracy or not. We didn't care. We went for stability. So we'll talk about how we're viewed from the Egyptian people. But first, we're going to talk about WPFW, because right now we have a fun drive. We got lots of expensive things, things like, you know, we've gotten accustomed to like light and heat and things of that nature,
this
which are very difficult to get.
This is a new world coming.
And we are moving forward.
If you like the programming,
we got big doings.
And if you're listening to us now, you do like the program because you would have turned off your radio.
And in fact, are we not right now on Skype? Isn't that one of the technological? Yeah, we're on Skype. We're no longer, you know, linked by cable.
Well, actually, we were using a string and a tin can and Morse code.
We need a bigger string and a bigger tin can.
Yeah, that's right.
But we are making great technological changes. We are making structural changes. I mean, obviously, all gradually and all as it fills out, but we've got some great people involved in leading the station right now.
We need your support.
And we need your support more than ever because there's a lot of great change being planned.
202-588-9739.
Or
1-800-222-9739.
And we have a great program now where you can just pledge a certain amount per month. We can put it on your credit card once a month. As little as $10. As little as $10 a month.
The Bill of the Month Club.
Yeah, just think. Yes, yeah, the Bill of the Month. So you join the Bill of the Month Club every month. The money will be taken out of your account and it helps.
It provides security. I do that with one of the charities, Amnesty International, and I'm sure many of the listeners do that with other charities. It's a great way of giving support and giving the charity some stability.
Right.
And WPFW is not a charity, but it does need that economic stability.
And we offer something that no charity offers, the chance to be part of us, to join the Raucous Caucus,
to be raucous with the caucus.
To give us a topic for $50,
to
join us right here at Ben's or in studio for $100, and for a mere $150, you're in charge. It's your topic and your show.
And we promise you that you will be treated with the respect and dignity that Mark and I treat each other with. You'll get better, hopefully, the way you treat each other. I was going to say
the respect and dignity that the three of us never get.
We'll take lessons. We are actually going to have a guest host at the end of this month who did pledge last pledge drive for exactly this gift, and we'll be choosing the topic, and we'll be a co-host with you. So this is real. We're not just making this up.
You can bring all your friends, family members. I mean, and look.
Bring them to Ben's. They can come and ask you questions.
Just think one day you can tell your grandchildren, even now if you have grandchildren, I was on a 50,000-watt station in Washington, D.C. I was heard from Maryland and Delaware to Richmond.
With Mark, Terry, and Garland.
Yeah, that's the good part.
I mean, that's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Way back when.
But the point is,
before they were all household names.
But the point is, the reason we're offering you this gift is because obviously we have fun. But we also really do some investigative journalism.
It's seriously funny.
Yeah.
That's our new tagline.
You know, it's a joy to be part of this group, to work with Mark and Garland.
Thanks, Terry.
It's a joy to be able to, you know, also bring you some information while we're having fun with each other. Join us in doing that. $50. You pick the topic, $100, your co-host, $150. You got the whole shebang.
You can have
202-588-9739.
You can have fun while you make a difference. Now, once again,
that's a nice slogan. I love that. Have fun while you make a difference.
You're listening to the Raucous Caucus here on 89.3 FM, WPFW, Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon.
Mark Levine.
Pedro Mubarak.
The doctor of diplomacy.
Yeah, Terry D. Kester.
Terry D. Kester.
Glad to be here.
And we're on every Tuesday from 7 to 7
p.m. The audience member is staring at me like I'm just totally out of my mind.
And tonight we have with us.
Am I losing it right here?
Losing it. I think you lost it a long time ago, Terry.
Our audience is looking at Terry.
We have with us, we're talking about Egypt, and we have a special guest, Mr. Tarek Nebet. Mr. Nebet we consider him our Egyptian specialist and scholar. He actually lived in
our scholar in residence.
Yes, a gentleman and a scholar. He actually taught in Egypt from 2002 to 2006. He lived in Egypt. He's
so
an Egyptian
he would descent. Know how the Egyptians think
and
about us.
Listen to this. His grandfather was the deputy prime minister under Anwar Sadat. So, hey, he knows everything there is to know. So what were we talking about when I left? At my age, you know, they just things just go right out of my
head. We were talking about what's the view of the Egyptian people
about how the Americans and the American government.
And that's a great question because it's one question that doesn't ever get distinguished very clearly when you're over there. So Egyptian people, first and foremost, are just very warm and welcoming, okay? They'll invite you into their home for tea. They'll invite you into their coffee shop. They really want to interact with you and get to know you, okay? Now, when it comes to what do they think about us? If I walked into Egypt today and asked them, what do you think about me? They'll throw their arms open and say, we love you. You, the American people, okay, as distinguished from the American government and American government policies
but
towards
we elect them.
Egypt. True, but even in electing them, okay, once they're elected, we don't have that much control over the policies
you
that,
notice
they, right, that they implement. So you, Mark, you, me, Garland, Terry here, we walk over there. They love us. They really would love us, and they would love to get to know you, talk to you about everything.
Do they
and
blame us
the
for Mubarak?
Do they blame us for Mubarak?
Yes.
Yeah, keeping them in power.
Do they blame
for 30
the United
years?
States of America for their dictatorship?
Let's put it like this. For the political problems that they've had, period, related.
Or do they just blame Mubarak?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
I mean,
that's
because,
good. I'm glad. As an American, I'm glad to hear that.
No, I mean, again, like they said, they might have grievances and disagree with certain American policies towards Egypt and the Middle East, but are they going to blame us for their particular situation?
But isn't that growing? Because, I mean, what I have been told.
I've seen posters.
One of my one source that I've been dealing with besides the news and everything else is my sister-in-law, and she made it quite clear that the people of Egypt, for the most part, really hate Mubarak.
Well, that's true.
It's not just disagreeing. This is not, you know, disagreeing between Sarah Palin and Obama. A lot of people really hate Sarah Palin,
but that's also
not
something.
Look at the number of people protesting, you know, in favor of the pro-democracy, anti-government protesters versus the pro-Mubarak protesters. The numbers are mostly in favor of the pro-democracy.
And I don't know if this is a fact or not, but she told me that when Anwar Sadat, who your father or grandfather worked for, when he left office or at the end of his life, rather, when he was killed, that's right. He had 900 pounds. That was his wealth. 900
wouldn't surprise me. I'm not exactly sure.
Whereas Mubarak has
30
literally
billion.
Mubarak is seen as substantially more corrupt than Sadat.
He's worth 30 billion.
Okay.
Sadat.
I mean, let's face it. Sadat was a dictator too, but he was much more loved, I think, than Mubarak.
Certainly started off that way. I mean, the way because he was followed Nasser was
right,
a very strong pan-Arabist, you know, very nationalist and socialist leader. And so that was sort of his second in command, came out of the army as well, followed what he thought would be the right path forward. After they lost to the Israelis in the 73 war, he realized, okay, that type of rule, the way they were going, was not going to be sustainable.
Do you think Sadat's 32-year peace treaty with Israel is respected today as something the Egyptian people want to keep if Mubarak's gone? I don't think the military wants to fight another war. Right?
No, and I don't think the Egyptian people want another war. I don't think the army wants another war. I don't think the government wants a war. They wouldn't win. I mean, we give Egypt a lot of aid, but we give much more to Israel.
Right.
So, you know, military power to power comparison, Israel is still stronger than Egypt. So,
because I heard it represent the Muslim Brotherhood saying they would try to dissolve the treaty, but
I've read on that. No, well, actually, what they said was the Muslim Brotherhood said if they were to take power, which of course is not going to happen, but if they were, they would it to referendum. Well, the reality is in Egyptian society, it's not going to go. It would never go anywhere. Number one, and number two, they don't have the horsepower in that society to take power anyway.
No. And, you know,
you don't think the Muslim Brotherhood will take power?
They don't have it.
I don't think so.
One of the things about the Muslim Brotherhood is this. A few years back, they were behind some bombing, some of their more extreme elements. Some of their more – remember, there's various wings.
And offshoot killed
Sadat. Right. In the Muslim Brotherhood, there are various wings in it.
Absolutely.
But one of their more radical element, there were some bombings at some of the tourist eras that killed a lot of innocent Egyptians. And Egyptian society turned on them really bad. So they've been actually trying to show moderation to the society to work back in, because they were hated for a while, because Egyptians didn't like that for two reasons. Number one, because they made a lot of money on tourism, and that hurt that. And number two, they were killing their people. So they really – and if you notice, when people say, well, people like al-Zawahiri and various people in al-Qaeda came from the Muslim Brotherhood, one of the things that happened was – the more extreme elements left or were run out of the Muslim Brotherhood and moved to al-Qaeda because the level of extreme fundamentalism wasn't there. And at my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's greater enmity between the Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda.
Well, they might not be exactly calling for the same thing.
Right.
And you know, there may be some similarities in terms of what they want for their domestic populations, but overall, I don't know that they actually get along.
Yeah, my understanding is that they're not.
But it's a different situation. And when you've got chaos, when you've got a chaotic situation, it's natural, unfortunately, that those groups that present unity or power or control or some way of getting beyond the chaos are the groups that often gain the power.
Well, let me
and the Muslim Brotherhood is actually in a position to do that, where there's no other organization out there in Egypt, as I understand it, that is in a position to provide that.
Let me throw this to you, Tarek, really quickly, and that is one of the differences where there won't be chaos. My understanding is that, unlike some other countries, you know a little bit about the Constitution. There is, in fact, orderly secession in the Constitution as to if this person loses power, similar to ours, this person, and et cetera.
Which has not worked too well for the last 30 years.
You know, there's a vice president that just got appointed after a little 30
right.
years late.
But so I'm saying to avoid chaos, let's hear an expert, Tarek.
What's going to avoid chaos is the leaders in the street, civil society, calling for restraint.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean,
Imams.
Mubarak could die tomorrow of a heart attack. Okay, mm-hmm. And whoever takes over officially, the vice president. Okay, would that type of leadership would have to be called forth to maintain the calm and with no violence. It's going to be the will of the people, the will of the leaders, not to run themselves into the ground even further with a civil war. So
we're running very short on time.
We keep our fingers crossed, and we have a question.
One question from our audience.
From our audience, one question, and we got to talk a little bit.
Go ahead.
Yeah. My name is Marvin, Pacific Swing, Maryland. Yeah, your guest, I forgot his name, but he pointed out something that I want to collaborate on, okay? He stated that the Egyptian people are very friendly people, and they are really upset, not only at Mubarak, but the U.S. foreign policy towards that country. But I want to play devil's advocate right here. Don't you think that, you know, with our tax dollars funding the military here in the United States, don't you think that the American people share some responsibility for what is happening in Egypt?
Do the American people share responsibility?
Should the American people share responsibility for what's going on?
Do they, I guess.
Yeah. Do they?
Well, we, as Garland said earlier, we are responsible for electing our own officials, okay? And, you know, the American people certainly do and could have a role into our American foreign policy. The problem is not very many Americans take that initiative upon themselves to get involved with U.S. foreign policy.
Most Americans don't even know our foreign policy. But that's a whole other show, right?
And it's coming up soon.
Let's give out the numbers one more
202-588-9739. We need to hear from you. We need your pledges for WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica, the greatest station in Washington, D.C.
With
the greatest show on the air, Raucous Caucus.
If you enjoyed tonight's show, if you enjoy us every Tuesday, as so many of you come in and tell us you do, now's your time. The show is ending. Pick up the phone and dial 202-588-9739.
And what's available, Terry?
Oh, $50, you get to pick the topic that Garland Mark
for
and I have to
For $100, you get to
co-host
the show
you get
with
to
us.
Sit here up with us, sit here with us. And for $150, you get topic and co-hosting.
The topic and co-hosting.
I know.
That's pretty awesome.
We only get
You're
that to
control.
Each other once every third week or
basically,
so.
Basically, we're giving them their own show
That's
on WPFW.
True. Wait a minute. Let's reconsider this.
And we'll be nothing
too
more
late,
than,
Terry, too late, Terry.
Okay.
Too late.
Okay. Well, we got to get out of here. We'll be their minions. So we got to get out of here.
Let's thank our guests, Tarek.
Thanks, Tarek Nabet.
Thank you, guys.
Kelly in the studio.
And we will see you next Tuesday at 7 p.m. We're out.